Processes and tools dominate today's Agile discussions, but we are devoted to the individuals and interactions that make it work. From the beginner to the veteran practitioner, we have something for you. Welcome to Agile for Humans.
All right, welcome to this week's episode of Agile for Humans. I'm your host, Ryan Ripley. Joining me tonight, author of two of my favorite books, The Agile Mindset and The Human Side of Agile, Gil Broza. Gil, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me here.
Hey, I'm excited to have you back on the show. Listeners may remember that last year at the Path to Agility Conference, we got a chance to sit down and talk for about 10 minutes. I think you were keynoting that year, and I think you had a very busy schedule, but you were able to fit us in and really appreciated that. It led to a lot of interesting conversation on Twitter about fostering an agile mindset, impediments to that mindset, you know, how to make the changes that lead to that mindset. And I think the listeners really like that. This time around, you actually teed up a topic that, so some behind the scenes real quick. So the Agile for Humans listeners may have heard in the last episode where we talked a little bit about the Slack channel. So if you've been a guest on Agile for Humans, you get invited to a Slack channel, and then we have discussions around topics and ideas, and we were batting around some thoughts on Agile in context. And then you had reached out and said, hey, this is something that I'm passionate about, something that I'm working on. So, Gil, when it comes to making Agile work in your reality, you know, where are your thoughts going on this? Because I think this is very congruent with the Agile mindset, the human side of Agile, you know, looking at context and then helping people make that work in their reality. You know, where are you advancing your work?
So what if I review my work, which has been in the coaching, consulting, facilitation domain for the past, 13 years. What's common to every gig I've had, every client I've worked with, is really helping them make Agile work for them. Everyone I know admits that every client is unique, and every client thinks of themselves as unique. Every organization is, in fact, unique. So we cannot give them the same solution. Now, as coaches, we don't actually give them a solution. We let them, we help them and guide them in figuring out a solution of their own. But again, the solution will never be the same as somebody else's. Even within the same organization, you will have different teams, different groups, different departments working differently, and that's okay. So what I want to do really, you know, for everyone is help them make that journey, you know, easy and more successful, simply more successful. And this cannot come about by simply saying, well, here is the Agile thing, take it. It's been through the wash, just run with it. Right. So whether that's an established framework or it's a set of practices, I'm particularly allergic to calling them best practices. What is common to all of these things are some characteristics, and that is what makes up the mindset, values, beliefs, and principles. The rest is up to you.
And so when you approach a client, and this is the part where I'm just amazingly interested in this, and I am perhaps too mm-hmm. interested in this, but when you approach a client, what are the things that you're watching? You know, I think every coach has given different answers to this, but when you're observing teams, and I'm assuming too much, but I'm assuming you observe quite a bit before you jump in and act like most, you know, thoughtful coaches do. When you're observing these teams and these organizations, what are the things that you're looking for? What are the smells or the tells of their organization?
So I look for, you know, a whole lot of things, and I don't think I even have a mental checklist. I know a lot of people work from all sorts of structures and patterns and a wheel and stuff like that. I don't necessarily do that. I just have this, you know, these few reminders. But here are some things that I always look for almost instinctively. I look for the dynamics. I look for how people actually act around each other and with each other. I look at how leaders work with their followers, whether they're formal leaders or informal. I look at what they're optimizing for. I look for gaps between what they say they do and what they actually do. I look at commitments and promises that they make. And I also look at what's known as in the coaching world as limiting beliefs, which is all the stuff people think they should do or stuff they think that they are, and they never even question. Just as an example, a recent client I had, the chief PO or product director or whatever the title was, he told me, I love all this Agile thing, but I can tell you the CEO is not going to change. Right, the CEO was behind a lot of the problems he was seeing, and he's saying, that's a non-starter. He's not changing and whatnot. So that is very interesting to me because I don't believe this out of the gate. I have to see for myself. But when I see that people believe such things, I have an idea of how far they'll actually bother with Agile concepts, with changing their thought patterns, and so on. So I look at what people tell others, what they tell themselves, how they think of work, and so on. Yeah.
So it sounds like you're looking at a lot of the interactions, a lot of the thoughts and beliefs, and maybe even evaluating the culture at a very high level.
Yes.
Once you have this information, and maybe this is also part of the workshop that I think you're working on around these lines too, how do you take those learnings and then turn them into actionable workshops or discussions or presentations? What is the way that you approach that in order to actually help that learning begin?
So, and you alluded to this earlier when you mentioned our previous conversation. I usually get asked to come in and help with Agile, and that is a very specific thing. So I can say to them, look, you're interested in Agile. Agile is this set of values and this set of principles, and it works when these beliefs are met. Okay, if that's what you're interested in, and my assessment will usually tell me if they're really interested or they're just, making noise because everybody else is going Agile. But assuming that they are interested in that, I can say, all right, if this is the destination, here are some things that you're doing that are totally aligned with that, and here are some things that are going on that are not aligned with that, and here is the subset that's going to give you trouble. And this is where I talk about, again, leadership and dynamics and team formation and expectations and commitments and process and all of those things. So I already know from doing this for so many years which aspects of Agile and which aspects of the journey are particularly problematic. And so those are the ones that I would pay attention to. So for me, for instance, when I go to a potential client and they say, all right, so we have this checklist of can we do Agile? And the checklist says, well, can you co-locate a team? Can you have a PO? Can you do daily stand-ups? I said, I don't care for any of that. I want to see that you have people who would even be interested in working together on an Agile team, not just being kind of lumped together in a so-called team that's under a shared boss, but really an Agile team, people who do actually hold each other mutually accountable and do succeed together and make a lot of the decisions they otherwise wouldn't be making. So there are definitely elements of the Agile journey and the destination, the target state, so to speak, that you definitely need to pay attention to. You need to pay attention to team design and org design. You need to pay attention to technical agility. You need to pay attention to managing the work intake, things like that. So these are some of the aspects that I would be pointing out and saying, all right, this is going to get in the way. Here are some suggestions for dealing with this. How much do you want me to help you? That's basically it.
Yeah, I appreciate you walking through that. I think it's a great way to approach just a client in general. It's through that observation, and then you take those learnings forward and work with the client. Hey, everybody. Ryan Ripley here. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more with Gil Broza. Are your test automation skills up to par? Are you comfortable with TDD, BDD, and ATDD? Get both the foundational knowledge and the technical skills you need to successfully test software in an Agile environment with courses by today's sponsor, SQE Training. SQE Training is one of the Techwell companies and is the exclusive training provider at their Agile Dev, Better Software, DevOps, and STAR conferences. Combining this access to many of the industry's most sought-after practitioners, With their resources like Agile Connection and Sticky Minds, they help organizations around the world improve their skills, practices, and knowledge in software development and testing. During August, Agile for Humans listeners can save 20% on their Agile Testing and Agile Test Automation courses with the code 17CHFA. This offer is good on both their public classroom courses in 6 cities across the U.S. or from anywhere with their live virtual courses. You can get details on the courses as well as see the upcoming dates and locations by visiting ryanripley.com/SQE. Again, use promo code 1717CHFA to save 20% on Agile Testing and Test Automation courses by visiting ryanripley.com/SQE. What do you find are actually the biggest barriers for them taking that next step forward and to learn some of the lessons that you're putting forward?
Denial? Denial, I think, would be up there. Well, I suppose you're familiar with Christopher Avery's responsibility process, right? And I'm sure many of the listeners are as well, right? Where basically we catalog the non-responsible behaviors as, you know, denial and blame and justification and whatnot. And all of these are present when I present my findings and my suggestions. You know, the last client that I was referring, when I met the VP of technology and the chief product owner and gave them my assessment, the VP was in full denial. Oh, it's not that bad. And oh, no, we got it under control. It's all fine. You know, what you're saying here, yeah, I guess that's right, but don't worry about it. It's fine. And so on. Which definitely didn't help. And, you know, the other guy kept telling him, what are you talking about? Of course it's a problem. It's going to be a problem. It always has been a problem. And it's funny just to see how, you know, one person will admit it and the other one will not and how they deal with it. But let me tell you, it's definitely hard to pull people out of that stance. It's definitely hard. And, you know, another stance is that of blame, where people will say, all right, so I hear what you're saying, but, you know, it's not my fault. They did this to me. This is not my doing. You know, if management only did this and that, if our stakeholders weren't so difficult, if we didn't have to do this and whatnot. And this is definitely what I have to deal with when I discuss, you know, this type of, you know, assessment or the overall journey, whether they take me to help them or not. These are definitely the stances that I have to deal with, and pretty much everything else is secondary in importance.
So when you talk about adapting the practices and agility for context or observing a company and then seeing how you can help or help them improve, what does that mean for companies that want to implement Scrum? Now, this is a framework that we talked about in the last episode quite extensively, with a lot of varying opinions and discussions there. That, you know, if you want to check that out, it's in the feed, and I thought it was a good discussion on Scrum. Mm-hmm. However, if we're looking at Agile in context, does Scrum still fit in that world, in your opinion?
It does and it does not. It does because Scrum was definitely designed from the Agile mindset. The values are there. Most of the principles are there. Scrum is silent on some of them, but it's definitely, you know, based on the Agile mindset and congruent with it. But that is not necessarily the Scrum that people see and get, even if they go to the training. You know, too many of the people I encounter, their view of Scrum is the pretty picture, right? The pretty picture with the big cycle and the small cycle and this thing that looks like a stack of paper, you know, basically the backlog. You know, if you were to communicate Scrum by basically saying what the artifacts are and the roles are and whatnot, this is a very flat perspective. And this will not work without context. I have a team right now where, you know, we had the retrospective, and one guy mustered the courage to say, you know what, I really don't like the daily stand-up. And somehow the conversation continued, and he said, you know, I just don't see why we're doing this. And I asked the guys, okay, so why are you doing this? And nobody had a good answer. And until somebody said, well, you know, I thought we had to, right? Because back when our team lead was here, well, that's what we did. And well, she's no longer there. I said, well, what if you didn't do the stand-up? What would happen? Right. So this started a coaching snowball. But the thing is, they were under the assumption that they had to do certain things. And I'm not of the opinion that you have to do anything. Everything is a choice. You might have to do something if management forces it on you, but that's already a different anti-pattern. It's not coachable at the team level. So context means that I might start you off with a daily stand-up because generally it's better than having nothing. And it's a really good coordination mechanism. And when facilitated well, has a nice side effect of doing team building. But if I see that it's degenerating into a useless status meeting, if I see that it's boring, which it often is, if I see that, you know, people drag themselves into that meeting, but they don't really want to participate, and I see that they get the coordination anyway, like that team I was describing, then you know what? Customize it away. Same with the demo, right? Demo is meant to basically get you actionable feedback from stakeholders who are finally seeing what they asked for. And what if they don't show up? Half my clients, that's the reality. They do demo to themselves. Well, okay. If you wanted to show and tell, that's fine. But I don't see how this is helping. Agility in context, agile in context, I like to start with something that is recognizable. I like to start with something that generally works. I do have a framework that I suggest. It is kind of based on Scrum. It has elements you would recognize from SAFe. It's stuff I've done for many years. But I also know that there are several pieces in it that are, you know, are not battles to pick. Right. It's more important to me that you form teams that have good prospects of actually, you know, thriving together. It's more important to me that the team works from a single authoritative list, a single coherent list, whether you call it a backlog or whatever, I don't care. It's important to me that you actually finish stuff. It's important to me that you work on what's valuable. You can always trace every work item to value. So Scrum gives you all of that, but you don't have to have Scrum in order to get that.
So that's definitely a viewpoint that was expressed last week in various forms, and I think it's one that a lot of people carry forward, is that they take, you know, bits and pieces from other practices with the goal of trying to get companies to deliver. And I think it's an interesting take on coaching teams, especially if you're framework agnostic. So I mm-hmm. you know, I tend to lean towards Scrum, and that you know, some people are very allergic to that kind of thinking, but you know, I like the idea of agile in context. Now, I tend to believe that Scrum can fit a lot of contexts and help people at least learn where some of their gaps are. You know, that to me is the power of it. And so if you're using bits and pieces but pulling from other places, what are the tools that you use to help companies actually discover some of their organizational dysfunction? And then hopefully help them face it.
Well, the primary tool, and we do get that from Scrum, is definitely the retrospective. And that's why it's so important to me that teams don't do it with their sprints too soon. I mean, it's not that I favor Kanban over sprints, but you know, some teams kind of grow tired of sprints. But I do want them reflecting frequently. And when they reflect, I like them to really look at various aspects of what's going on. You know, struggles to complete stuff, clarity of work, dynamics within the team, things like that. So again, all those aspects that I know are necessary for a successful Agile journey, these are the things that I like teams to review in the retrospectives. Now, depending on the team, I might not necessarily bring them up. I might kind of lead towards them. Or if the team needs a lot of hand-holding, then I will bring them up. So, you know, on the spectrum of, you know, totally participative and totally prescriptive, I'm kind of in the middle, but kind of moving around based on the team. But I actually want to go back to something you said before, that Scrum helps to expose the gaps. It does that. I would argue that basically any implementation based on the Agile values and principles, even a little bit on each principle, will do that as well. What I don't like is when people use Scrum as a whip, not thou shalt do Scrum or else. But when people say that Scrum will expose organizational dysfunction, I really take an issue with that. Because what I do think is that Scrum does not expose dysfunction. Scrum exposes the gap between the desired value system and the current value system. And that is not a dysfunction. That is a gap between two states. And the organization is in one state right now, says that they want to move to the other state. Scrum, based on that other state, will help you to see the gap. Fair enough. But the other thing that Scrum will actually not help you with is doing this at an organizational scale. And by this, I mean actually talking to, you know, the senior leadership that, you know, keeps the culture in place and keeps the value system in place, because Scrum is not designed for that level. We've extended it, we've scaled it, but the conversations are not there. And I find myself more and more coaching at more senior levels. And I started doing this years ago, but nowadays more and more. So I will often be, you know, on first name basis with the SVP, or if it's a smaller company, with the CEO, because this is where the change will be supported or prevented.
Right. So doesn't Scrum, though, provide the inputs for those conversations? What I mean is, you know, whether it's dysfunction, impediments, or a gap between desired states, to have a discussion with that executive level, which I'm also very familiar with, don't we have to walk in with quite a bit of evidence, which Scrum is actually pretty good at providing?
Yes, but again, not exclusively. So again, Scrum, when it fits, and I agree with you, it fits many contexts. When it fits, it will give us a lot of that evidence, absolutely. But again, you don't even have to go that far. If you only said, look, I'm going to get enough people on my team so we can finish valuable stuff. Okay, and let's say in software that would imply that, you know, you join testers and devs and maybe a BA and maybe an architect and so on, and you work from a list of valuable things that presumably prioritize to meet some useful objective. If you simply look at that and you see what you're accomplishing and what's actually happening, that will give you so much data. So much data. You don't have to count points or stories. It's not about Jira. It's not about templates. It's not about demos. It's not about any of that. It's about the fact that we're trying to finish valuable stuff quicker and we can't. What's going on?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think, you know, the impediments or the dysfunction or the gaps between the ability to ship working software, let me rephrase it. The ability to ship valuable working software frequently, identifying those things, that's the game. And whether you're using Scrum, which can be useful, or some other framework, or if you just start with a retro and build out, you know, I also believe, I agree with you that the retrospective is immensely powerful. I think you could actually rediscover Scrum just by starting with a retro and working forward as you retrospect through, you know, how would we rather work? Do we want to work in large time boxes or small? Well, small time boxes give us more frequent feedback, right? So let's pick that. And then you could work through those different discussions through more retrospecting. But
Hold on. If you only started with retrospecting, couldn't you just as well discover Kanban?
Absolutely. I think a team could also just as equally decide that throughput instead of sprinting could be valuable in their context, depending on the type of work they're doing and the way that their organization is structured.
Absolutely. So really what we're saying is, if we take a mechanism that is geared to improvement, but we're also cognizant of what we're optimizing for, right? And in Agile, we optimize for delighting our customer, and in Kanban, we optimize for throughput. Wonderful. If we just started with that, we would get someplace. I have a client right now, another client, where they've been kind of limping along with Scrum, you know, various levels, different teams and whatnot. And I had a conversation with one of the dev managers last week, and he told me, you know, we just decided that we want to be shippable every 2 weeks, regardless of sprints or whatever. We just want to be shippable every 2 weeks and not every like 2 months. And now that has totally changed how they think of stories and testing them. They actually start with a test plan for each story, not the traditional, you know, 80s type of test plan, but the test strategy, really, on, you know, how would we know that we're done? And, you know, they also, they don't test later, they test during and things like that. That little change in what we optimize for has created the snowball effect, which, again, could coexist with Scrum, with Kanban, with Lean, doesn't matter. So, yeah, I mean, look, when it comes to frameworks, it's funny. You know, when you look at SAFe, for instance, there are so many elements in it that resemble how we used to do, you know, big Agile like 10 years ago. And generally, it's a good idea. But again, context. Absolutely, absolutely context. And in some contexts, it would make sense. And in others, it wouldn't. The problem is that a lot of people don't actually know what they're allowed to change. And they think of it as being allowed, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. That permission factor can definitely hold teams back. And even just discovering that, you know, it's interesting. Teams are often reluctant to make certain changes or to solve certain problems. And management will often sit back and say, well, why wouldn't you solve that? And both sides are not connected on what's permissible. And I think you're right. That's another big area of, you know, that, and perhaps that's where working agreements and some other retro discussions come into play. But all of those disconnects and gaps, just, I think they all add up. It's this cumulative effect on an org that I think the kind of work that you're doing through these discovery and then making adaptations, I think that really helps pull some of those gaps a little bit closer together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So something that I'm interested in, I like talking to book authors, because I find that with the two books already published, what I find is once someone writes two, there's always a third on the way. And so I'm curious, what ideas are you working on right now? And is my hunch correct that there could be a third book in the works?
Well, so for about 8 months, I had stickies on the wall in the hallway near my office that was third book laid out. And then I decided not to do it, which was a matter of basically, you know, sorting my work by value, and I decided that writing the third book would not be as valuable. What is interesting, though, and this is definitely not something I saw coming, which, you know, evolutionary design, right? What can you do? Is once I captured the content of the stickies, you know, in pictures or in words before I took the stickies down, I realized, oh, you know what? This is actually all the stuff I do with my clients to help them succeed, right? So if a client is willing to invest, and it's usually, you know, a sizable investment to, you know, get me for the journey until they reach self-sufficiency, here's what I will do with them. And then I realized, you know what? I should probably bottle this and make it into a workshop. I wanted to create a workshop for people who had already taken CSM and CSPO or stuff like that and are now wondering, okay, so how do I marry the ideals and the concepts that I learned about in the course with my messy reality? What can I change in my reality to become more agile? And on the flip side, what can I legitimately change in Agile while keeping it Agile so that it will even work in our context and stick? And so this is what I'm now building a workshop for. So we're recording this when I'm sort of halfway through its design. And I plan to, you know, teach a session at the end of September and most likely at least one next year. So instead of a book, we got a workshop.
Very good. So do you have any ideas or things that you can share with the listeners about, you know, about bridging that gap? So these people, all of us take the 2-day courses, we move on to perhaps the CSP or the PSM 2 or 3, we mm-hmm. advance in our careers, we get some experience, but really changing the mental mindset or changing our own mindset and shifting our reality, as you discuss, you know, do you have a tip a method or something that people can think about, not to give away the entire point of the workshop, but just, is there something that people can do today that would help them make that next step?
Well, it's the one tip I keep sharing everywhere, and we probably even talked about this last year. Anytime you have a situation and you want to make it better, or there's something you're doing, practice, process, whatever, and it's not quite getting you what you're after, make those changes based on the principles and the values. There are two lists. One is really short. The other one is kind of longer. Simply review them and say, all right, which of these am I not getting here? Which of these could I get more of? Okay. For instance, we do, a sprint demo. Okay. And most of the people I know get bored witless with the demo. Okay. So they might be getting some feedback from some stakeholder, but it's usually not worth the 1 hour of everybody in there together. Okay, so maybe we're getting the feedback. Let's say it's enough, but what else from, from the agile thinking, can we get more of here? Can we get more collaboration here? Can we infuse more collaboration into a demo? Well, we could, right? Maybe we could, instead of doing essentially a show and tell, we can have something that's more like exploratory testing. Right. So, people kind of demo to themselves while the stakeholders kind of demo to themselves while the team engages them in conversation. Maybe that would be useful. I don't know. Maybe we find ourselves working in sprints, but the sprints feel like overhead. Well, maybe there are some things about the sprints that we can change and some things that can simply go away. Right? This is a lot of how No Estimates was born. Right? So always fall back on the principles. Right? They're there to serve the values. They make the client happy, people come first, collaborate with the customer, deliver frequently, right? Adapt to change. So just get more of them. I use the principles simply as a checklist. What else could we get here?
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful tip, and I really appreciate you sharing that with the listeners. I think it's one that I frequently use. I've discussed in past episodes, kind of a journaling exercise, and I try to do that with the manifesto, and if I'm working in a Scrum environment, the Scrum guide kind of at my side as I think about the day, the struggles, the challenges, and then how I can infuse the values, principles, and framework back into what I'm doing. And I find that just it helps keep those things front of mind. And I think it helps us deepen our understanding. You know, the Agile Manifesto is deceptively simple, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 4 principles, 12 values. But as you really think about the implications of living those values and applying those principles to your work, you find that these are incredibly deep statements that can have very profound impacts on the way that you even do, like a sprint review, as you were talking about. And so I think that's, again, a really great tip for the listeners, and appreciate you sharing that. I think it's actually a good place for us to leave off on this talk. Just okay. Such a great, powerful tip for the listeners that they can actually make actionable today. And so, again, thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this part of the show, now you're a veteran of this show, so I think from last time we did this too, anything that you would like to plug, this is your opportunity to get your contact information, upcoming workshops, talks, anything that you're offering in front of the listeners so that they can continue the conversation, check out what you're up to. We'll definitely get links to the book, so The Agile Mindset and The Human Side of Agile, into the show notes so that listeners can check that out. Highly recommend both of those books. Really help you dig into the human aspects, the values and principles, and that it's just great ways to infuse that thinking and mindset into your practice. But anything else you have, Gil, I'd love it if you'd get that in front of the listeners.
Yes. Well, first off, about the books, of course, anybody can get them on Amazon. But if you follow the links that you'll post with the show notes and you buy directly from me, I actually donate that money to charity. So I would actually really prefer it if you bought it from me, because then the middleman, Amazon, gets less or gets nothing.
Sure.
So that would be nice. They make enough. So there's that. Really, the... My one big way to stay connected to people is through my newsletter, which is, you know, a fancy word for an article every couple of weeks. And every few editions, I actually engaged the readers with some questions and surveys, and they've helped me a lot over the years. And this is also how I get to create things like that. So, like when this new workshop is ready, that's where I'll announce it. Right, it's not a certified anything, so it won't be in, you know, one of the major course outlets. So anybody who's curious about this, if you just get on my list, this is where stuff like this gets announced, and where I seek feedback from people and whatnot. Simply at just register on my website at 3pvantage.com. Yeah, other than that, I get to do a lot of speaking engagements. I guess this could be counted as one, right? I don't know. like I did PATH last year. I'm going to be doing something in North Carolina next year. I do a lot in Toronto where I live. So anybody who's interested, just and they're in your area or they're virtual, come and find me there. So that's really how I keep in touch with people. Because I don't know that there's going to be a third book. So really, it's mostly the newsletter.
Well, the workshop sounds great, and I'm sure the listeners, as soon as that comes out, we'll get some links out to that so that people can check that out. Okay. This episode will probably air while I'm at Agile 2017, and I think, Gil, you're not going to be there this year, are you?
No, I decided not to go this year.
Yep. Yep. Sometimes it's good to take a little break from the conferences, and totally understand that. How long?
My first one was 2004. And I actually, went on my own dime, but I had this experience report published there, and it was chosen as the best one out of six. So that gave me free admission. This was my first Agile conference. The following year, it got, it merged with the other conference, and that's how we got that big. The big one, right? Which is now 2,500 people. So I've gone basically every year since then, with one exception.
Excellent. Well, yeah. You've earned a break, but we will miss you there, and and hope to see you at future ones.
Cool. Okay.
So as for me, your host, Ryan Ripley, again, I'll be at Agile 2017. So if you're listening to this while you're there, come and find me, say hello. Would love to connect about the show and anything we've talked about and hear your thoughts. Those are definitely appreciated. Also want to just say thank you to the listener out there, all of you who are sharing the show. The download numbers have dramatically increased. We've actually seen a massive bump month over month. That means you are all sharing the show with friends and clients, and cannot thank you enough for that. And so really just a lot of gratitude coming your way. Thank you for sharing. If you get a moment, please go out to iTunes, leave us a review. That helps us get the word out as well, and it helps the show grow and helps us get great people like Gil to come on the show and talk to us about all the things that he's thinking about and working on. So really appreciate that help. Gil, again, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
Listeners, thank you for being out there. And this is Ryan Ripley saying, have a great night.
Thanks for listening to Agile for Humans. Let's keep the conversation going. Drop us a question on Twitter @AgileForHumans or visit agileforhumans.com.